Thank you very much, and thank you for arranging this. I sneaked into the end of this morning's session, and it was interesting because it wasn't what I expected, because I think people were generally sort of celebrating the position they found themselves in. So part of my summary of the end of what I heard was, we shouldn't be confrontational. The rest of the nation is benefiting from the growth and the power of London. London is providing opportunities for young people, if not the majority of young people with university degrees. It was interesting that the people with university degrees were all saying that they had to take a job here and they wanted to take one somewhere else, but it didn't exist. But anyway, at least there's a job. And it isn't what you normally expect when you have a meeting about London and the nation and inequality and wealth and the rest of Britain. And it will partly be where we are. You are all the winners. You are in the world's most expensive city. You have enough time to pop in on a Saturday and listen to somebody waffling on to you in the world's most expensive city. You are not a particularly representative audience of Londoners, let alone of people in Britain, let alone people in the world. But it may also be the effects of what else is going on, in that we may be counting our blessings at the moment. You mentioned my co-author, Demetrius Ballas. We've done work mapping Europe. Demetrius is currently based in the beautiful University of the Aegean. And in case any of you didn't know where the Department of Geography in the University of the Aegean is, it's on a small island called Lesvos, which is 3 miles from the Turkish border. I suspect at least half of you in the room, I promise not to stereotype you any more than this, will know quite a lot about Lesbos, because Lesbos appears to be where Guardian journalists like to go on holiday. So there have been, not you, Zoe, yet.
But, actually, I wrote the first piece.
You did the first one, you were there. But then people followed you. I didn't read your piece. And of course, so you should know, for those half of you who are misguided enough not to read The Guardian, what's been happening in Lesbos, of course, they've suffered from the general crisis that's been going on in Greece. Part of the negotiations today may be that the islands no longer get the slight subsidy which allows them to survive. But at the same time as all that is going on, and people are unable to actually draw their salaries and now not even the 60 euros a day or 40, which they don't have, you don't get an endless pit of depression in Lesbos, because every day 500 middle-class people arrive in dinghies who are arriving from Syria. They're the ones coming the clever way. The stupid way is up from Libya. The clever way is 3 miles across the Aegean and into Syria. They walk around the edge of the island every day. There's only enough space for 500 a day on the dinghies. They get to the ferry terminal by the evening, and at 8 o'clock the ferry takes them to Athens, where they're processed. And then they start walking north and west, because there's not much point hanging around in Greece at the moment. And if you've got this kind of thing going on in your continent, then sitting in a city which has had an unprecedented economic boom in the last 4 or 5 years, it's very hard to moan about it, I think. I think that's part of what's going on. The reason I've stuck this graph up is because I can't resist putting a graph up if there is a screen. This comes from the second edition of Injustice. It's one of the graphs that changed. So I wrote this book about 5 or 6 years ago, and if you could take the last 10 years of data off, you'll see the difference. Essentially, what's happened, this is the GDP by continent. It's the change moved over 10 years, so it kind of gets all the wiggles out. Is Africa is finally doing better, but from an incredibly low base. So it's not as people in Africa are doing particularly well, but it's shooting up. Much more importantly, Asia's shooting up now. It really is a change. North America and Europe are on a pretty steady decline when it comes... This is GDP growth, but when it comes to share of the world's productivity and wealth, we're now looking at an equalising world. How does this fit in London? Well, London is the place in Europe with the most connections, certainly to Africa, but also to Asia. So where do you put your money if you're a successful Chinese businessman, the majority are men? You might put it in the Chinese stock market. Well, you might have put it before then into the Chinese housing market, but the housing market crashed. And people stopped putting money into the Chinese housing market when it crashed, and they didn't learn from a housing crash. They move it somewhere where it looks safer, and they move it to London. You now move it from a stock market in China to a stock market where it looks safer. Where do you send your daughter, if you've got one daughter, to university in the world, if you've got money? Well, you send her to London. London's full of these wonderful universities. You can send them to elsewhere in Britain, and in fact, many provincial cities have really benefited from this. But London is the prime place, well, not just for China, for India as well. And if you are going to send your daughter or maybe your son, you might as well buy a flat for them to live in for 3 years as well, because it's a good investment. At the same time as that's been going on, the Americans, partly because of that fall in income in America, have been getting much tougher about overseas citizens. If any of you got a green card, you'll know that if you happened, well, many of you are very well off and they got a green card. You know, if you happen to have a couple of properties and you sell one and make some money on it, you ought to pay your tax on that in America or they won't let you back in. The mayor of London, Boris, discovered this recently. He was very angry about this. He announced how he was absolutely not going to pay this tax. And then he quietly paid it because he wants to still be able to go into the US. The US authorities made a deal with the Swiss authorities, I think about 2 years ago, to allow them to look into all the bank accounts in Switzerland. What happened about 2 years ago, about 18 months ago, before the bank accounts opened up? The money went down in the Swiss bank accounts. And where did the money go? Where do you put your money if you can't put it in a Swiss bank account anymore? You buy in London. It's a safe place, or it's seen as a safe place to house money. And a lot of the reason why London has done well, particularly in terms of the worth of residential property, but also business property, is this flight of money from the rest of the world as the world becomes more turbulent. And we're not particularly averse to this. Another reason why this happened is that Singapore, very shortly after the crash in 2008, enacted, I think it's 9 separate pieces of legislation, one after another, to stop capital flight to Singapore, to stop people buying property in Singapore because they could see what's going to happen. The average house price in London for, this is a 3-bed semi in zone 3, I would guess, $500,000. Oxford Economics forecasts say it's going to be $1 million before 2030. It's not because we've suddenly become massively more productive. That really hasn't happened. Our most productive industrial sector was finance. And our financiers didn't become much, much, much better. 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12. They may have become a bit better. I mean, they certainly learnt a lot. Some of them did a lot of work trying to move various indices to make a bit more money for their firms, and they're paying some fines for that now. But that isn't the reason why London has become more expensive. It's not our bankers and their amazing ability that has sucked a higher proportion of the world's wealthy into London. It's what they're going away from, what they're worrying about. It is things like our amazingly generous property taxes. I'd love any of you to try to name me another big city in the rich world which has special property tax bans so that if you live in the most expensive area, you pay half the property tax than, say, if you live in Barking and Dagenham. I'd like to see somebody try to introduce this to a city like Birmingham. This is a differential council tax regime. It's what we have in London. It's done by borough. And it's very attractive for the very, very rich. I think there's nowhere else on the planet where you can pay just £1,300 a year for the privilege of storing £40 million in an asset which appears to be going up in value. The Land Registry released the latest figures last night, showing how many streets were over a million and so on and so on and so on. And you can see my worry about it. It's a safe haven. It's based on events in the world that have occurred quite recently. This latest boom and increase is not something that's based on us bringing Silicon Roundabout and the flat white economy in. I can recommend you the book Flat White Economy. Have any of you read Flat White? Think about how 40,000 firms are started in a year near Hoxton and how wonderful it is. You just have to look up what happened to the author of that book. I won't say any more. But we don't tend to. It's not that. It's not Google coming. It's not Amazon having a little headquarters. That's not the reason for the rise. The other thing we often get very wrong is we mistake salaries and wages for productivity. The reason we mistake salaries and wages for productivity is very, very simple. We measure productivity using salaries and wages. So the more you're paid, the more productive you are. You may not realise this. If you're lowly paid, I'm afraid that's because you're just not working hard enough. If you're paid two or three times, and there were people in this room paid two, three, four times more than other people in this room, the reason that the economists give is that you are much more productive. That's why you're paid more. I think it's a bit more nuanced than that. What tends to happen, if somebody asks somebody like me to come for a job in London, there's a certain amount of money I need to be paid to take a job in London if I can get a job anywhere else in the country. And it's a very simple amount to calculate. I really do want to buy a house. I don't want a particularly nice house, a particularly special house, but I do want to buy one because I'm quite old. I've got kids. I've had enough of landlords. I know there are some nice ones. I've been unlucky enough never to actually be a tenant of any of those. But in general, it's not a fun situation to be in. And so I know what salary I would require if I had any choice, any freedom to be in this city. And it's a pretty high one. Would that mean that I'd suddenly become dramatically more productive when I moved and worked for King's or the LSE or UCL or what? No. And how would UCL and King's and the rest of it pay my inflated salary if they wanted to employ me? Well, I was charged £25,000 for overseas master's students from China whose dad's decided to invest in a flat. It can all work for a certain amount of time. But London has high and rising wages because Londoners have to have high and rising wages just to be qualified for the mortgage or be able to pay the rent. And they can get thinner because they won't be able to afford the food, but at least they can pay the rent. And so I think this is very much a temporary thing, and I'm almost at the end of my 20-minute rant. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. The alternative, right round the periphery of Europe, if you just go from Cyprus to Greece to Italy through to Spain, look at what happened to Madrid, which is slightly better than the rest of Spain, but you're still talking property prices halving. Or go up and go over to Ireland, look what happened to Dublin, or look at Iceland. The entire periphery of Europe, almost exactly the same distance from Berlin, something happened which didn't happen here. And had it happened here, it would have been and could still be truly awful. But trying to pretend that it didn't happen here because we were productive in a way that the Irish and the Spanish and the Italians and the Greek and the Icelanders were not productive. It's just a bit foolish. I'm going to end just by reading you something that George Osborne said last week in a little speech he gave, which lasted just over an hour. In that little speech, George decided, or his SPAD, decided to add bits to the speech. So hopefully those bits will be in Hansard, but they're not in the transcript if you download the transcript that was given to the media. So I had to listen to George for about 5 minutes to be able to write this down. But this is what he said in the last 5 minutes of the speech. And I think it matters because I think it's a way of seeing where London is going, and a particularly London-centric view. And it goes, it was the Conservatives who first protected working people in the mills. It was the Conservatives who took a great step towards state education. Everything is technically true in this. It was the Conservatives who introduced equal votes for women. It was the Conservatives who gave people the right to buy. So you had to skip a long time then. So, of course, it is now the Conservatives who are transforming welfare and introducing a national living wage. This is the party for the working people of Britain. Now, you'll have seen over the last couple of days the debate about the £9 an hour that is the aspiration to head to. My prediction is it won't be £9 an hour for the whole country. It'll be £9 an hour for London by 2020. And what I'd ask you to do is not call it a living wage. I'd ask you to call it a servant wage. Because I think £9 an hour is the amount you'll need to spend in London in 2020 to get good quality servants over the age of 25. It's not a fortune. Remember, everybody else who's doing worse is a bit above that. But £9 an hour allows you to get a slightly better class of servant. And the London we're heading towards is the London of very rich, very well-off people, a gap in the middle, and I can argue with you about that gap. It's not huge, but it's there in the middle. And an increasing servant class that is growing bigger and bigger again, in a way that London used to have a servant class, but back when it really was the most powerful, productive place on the planet, because it was the actual centre of an empire, not a safe haven place to dodge tax in. I call it a servant wage, £9 an hour, because the key thing about servants is that they don't have children. And if you're watching the changes in the budget, they're all about not really encouraging the lower orders to breed, to put it very crudely. I think we're the first Western country now to copy China and have a two-child policy. It's a very weak two-child policy, but it's, for some reason, two is the magic number. Should be able to have two, but three really is too many. And the reason I worry about this is that this is a London that we're heading towards that we've got, which is only good for a minority of Londoners. Only minority numbers voted in for this government at the last election. And it isn't even good for that minority, because I don't think growing up in large houses with servants is necessarily a good upbringing for people. But that's just the kind of hippie I am. So thank you very much for listening to me.